You're listening to the Bloodroot Podcast, the show that empowers listeners to explore the deep roots of their family history by preserving stories, advocating truth, restoring context, and fostering healing. I'm your host, Sherry Daniels. Welcome to episode 9 of the Bloodroot Podcast. On today's episode, Ancestral Love, Documenting Relationships and Emotions. Join me as we explore the complicated relationships of our ancestors and look for ways to prove the related emotions. Welcome back, listeners. I want to begin today's episode by wishing all of our listeners a very happy Valentine's Day. And in this bonus episode, we're going to focus on love in its many forms. I apologize for teasing this episode last year. It was written but not recorded due to the many family issues that arose in 2021. Ancestral love can have a number of meanings, and while I am all about showing our ancestors love by researching their history and sharing the findings with others, I will be highlighting the love of our ancestors, or as near as we can get. As we will soon learn, love is a complicated concept. We've often heard the saying, "We are the result of the love of thousands." It's been shared in memes for quite some time now, but sadly, these memes often strip out the original author. Today, we will rectify this, and I want you to pass it on. No more authorless memes, please. This well-known quote is by author Linda Hogan, to be precise, from her book, Dwellings, A Spiritual History of the Living World. Ms. Hogan is an author, speaker, professor, and the writer-in-residence for the Chickasaw Nation. Here's a tip. Buy her books. Read her works. They are amazing. But let's get back to the love quote. We genealogists like to share this one often, but here is the quote in its original paragraph for context. Quote, "It's winter, and there is smoke from the fires. The square, lighted windows of houses are fogging over. It is a world of elemental attention, of all things working together, listening to what speaks in the blood. Whichever road I follow, I walk in the land of many gods, and they love and eat one another. Walking, I am listening to a deeper way. Suddenly, all my ancestors are behind me. Be still, they say. Watch and listen. You are the result of the love of thousands." End quote. Breathe deeply and just take in that prose. Beautiful and so meaningful to those who seek out or chase their ancestors on a regular basis. But if I'm honest, taken outside of the original context, and let's face it, it has been kidnapped and applied to other purposes. When applying it to the generic study of genealogy, I've always chafed a little at this sentiment. If we consider our ancestors in their complexity, we must also admit that the concept of love is enormously complicated. Our existence is the result of many things. But sadly, not always love. I mean, we like to think that our ancestors created us out of love. But as responsible researchers, we also have to acknowledge rape, coercion, incest, infidelity, and just plain old lust. I know this is far from the romantic episode you may have wanted for Valentine's Day, but stay with me. It will get more mushy as I go along. I promise. As most of you already know, I am very passionate about recording the truth in our family history narratives, at least as much as we are able, acknowledging that we will not always understand everything because we were not there. But even as we are committed to pursuing and recording the truth, how have we recorded or documented love in our ancestral relationships? As I pondered this question in preparation for this episode, I found myself struggling to answer this question in regards to my own family history. We are so quick to joyfully add the marriage date and location that we usually gloss over the relationship. Yes, much of that is due to lineage-based research habits, but perhaps we shy away from this aspect because it's a bit sticky. For instance, we understand that children born to an enslaved woman and her enslaver is extremely hard to record as a love union because the enslaved mother did not have the opportunity to decline the advances of the enslaver. Often these unions were formed out of rape, control, coercion, etc. While we were not there, and some may believe love was at play in a similar relationship, unless we can find a contemporary account from the person oppressed, we are duty-bound to frame the account in a way that reminds the next generation about the realities of those situations, namely the insidious evils of slavery, and the naturally complicated nature of the relationships that produce children. And by complicated, I'm going to push the envelope for just a second. While we acknowledge the truth of the true nature of slavery, I also believe that despite oppression and abuse, human nature dictates that love and affection can still grow in such rocky soil. Before you scream at me, I am not talking about a natural love for the enslaver, although I would imagine that may have happened from time to time. After all, Stockholm Syndrome existed back then as well, despite a contemporary name for such a condition. I'm talking about the human need to love and be loved. When life presents horrible circumstances, can we see places where love managed to survive? In family relationships, perhaps? The love and support of friends and religious affiliations? And of course, that parental bond for a child, even if their existence was a product of rape. For that matter, we cannot assume that every relationship in our tree was founded on love. And yet here we are, on Valentine's Day, and I'm urging you all to be on the lookout for love. Just as we become truth-tellers in our narratives, look for ways to document loving relationships. While we may not have actually been there to define the level of love, we may be witness to affection or close contemporaries to those who witnessed affection. Do not let those opportunities pass you by. Make a commitment to include evidence of love and affection in your narratives. Stay tuned for a brief message about the 2022 Roots Tech Conference, and when we come back, I'll share some of my own family love stories. Calling all family historians and genealogists, did you hear that Roots Tech, the world's largest family history conference and year-long learning platform, is going virtual and free once again for 2022? That's right. The team at Roots Tech is doing it all over again, promising an even richer buffet of genealogy goodness. This year's virtual event takes place March 3rd through the 5th, and registration is now open. Just visit rootstech.org. With thousands of classes, inspiring speakers, meaningful activities, and joyful connections, Roots Tech brings the human family together like no other event. Get ready to celebrate shared connections with people from around the world. Connect with friends, your family, your past, your heritage and homelands, all from the comfort of your home and in your browser. As an online experience, attendees will be able to choose from thousands of classes from around the globe and in multiple languages. Gee, that sounds like a lot of classes to take in during a 3-day window. Well, have no fear. There is no schedule for the regular sessions. These have all been pre-recorded and placed online for you to consume at your leisure. Think Genflix for us genealogy junkies. After the conference is over, you will have access to the full selection of sessions for the rest of the year, plus many from 2021. Beyond these dynamic classes, there will be inspirational keynote speakers, cultural activities, contests, virtual meetups, and a virtual marketplace. The keynote sessions are scheduled for the main page, but if you miss one, they are recorded for you to enjoy later. Oh, and one last thing, I'll be seeing you there as a speaker and influencer, so I apologize in advance that my social media feeds will be taken over during the conference. For more information about my speaking sessions, just search for my name once the conference goes live on the 3rd, or see my speaking page at genealogyliteracy.com/services. For the best conference experience, consider signing up for a free familysearch.org account before heading over to the registration portal. What are you waiting for? Sign up now and let's get connecting. Welcome back, all. In my family, I was witness to my grandparents' affection for each other, both sets of grandparents. I also loved the stories they told me about specific loving episodes of their lives, from dating to anniversaries to Valentine's Day. I grew up with no doubt as to my grandparents' love for each other. That is truly a blessing as a descendant, and I hope I have documented their love sufficiently over the years. Within the family collection, we can also see evidence of loving relationships. Valentines, letters, photos, travel ephemera, greeting cards, anniversary or wedding gifts. As long as you look for it, I'm sure you will find evidence of love, sometimes in the strangest of places. One of my favorite family love artifacts comes from my great-grandfather James Thomas Watts. After his wife died, he had to place his young children in an orphanage a half a state away because he was unable to care for them. He sent a tiny Bible to his son and wrote these words in the back. A couple of sayings you may recognize from their popularity over the years. Quote, "I love you now and will forever. You may change, but I will never. Death may come and we may part. That is all can change my heart. When this you see, remember me." From Dad to Son Roy. Unquote. Sometimes our greatest love stories do not come from within the family relationships. Another favorite love story comes from my third great grandmother, Jane Allender. As a teenager, she was employed as a domestic servant in the household of a local wealthy family. One of the sons of her employer fell in love with her and gave her a gold brooch. From our family history, we know that Jane did not marry this wealthy suitor, and I have no record of Jane's feelings for this young man. But despite the humble life she lived with her chosen farmer husband, and despite how high a price such a brooch would have fetched, she never sold it, and wore it proudly in every photo. Years later, it was even worn by her teenage daughters in their photos. It has remained a treasured family heirloom, despite it coming from another man. Love is love, and this was an important chapter in my grandmother's life. Plus, I'm sure it was the fanciest piece of jewelry she ever owned. Was it love on her part? Despite its value, if she didn't have fond memories of it, I doubt she would have kept it, let alone worn it so prominently. I often wonder what my grandfather thought of that brooch. And for my final family love story, I present the words of my great-grandfather Clyde. In late May 1930, he wrote to my great-grandmother Ruth. If anyone is familiar with this couple from my previous stories, these two were deeply flawed and complicated. I featured Ruth and her family at the last RootsTech conference we had in person at Salt Lake City in 2020. The most horrible chapter of her life was her membership in the KKK of Columbus, Ohio. I also featured this couple last season in an episode about trauma and abuse, as they were known to fight pretty often. She and my great-grandfather were a bit of a hot mess, especially when together. They married and divorced each other twice, but his letter to her in 1930 hit me pretty hard in the feels. My dear Ruth, I will now answer your most welcome letter and want to let you know how glad I am to hear you are out of the hospital and getting along all right. I feel sure you will soon be okay again and want you to be careful and take it easy and don't worry and don't try to get up and get a back set, so be careful and take good care of yourself. Ruth, the reason I didn't say much over the phone when I was talking to you before I started work today was because I expected to have a private conversation with you and was all alone. And after I had put in the call, people came in where I was, and I cut my conversation short for that reason, for I didn't care for anyone to hear what we had to say. Not that I cared, but I just didn't want our conversation disturbed. I had things to tell you. I would have much rather said to you over the phone than wrote. I am coming over to see you, Ruth, before 2 weeks, if I can get off. Sure would like to see you, for I have a lot to talk to you about, and just want to see you too. I'm glad to know, and I think you are doing the proper thing by not letting that person to come back. Use your own judgment, but I am afraid if he does, you cannot be happy, and eventually something serious happen. I don't believe he is the right type of a man for you, Ruth. I never saw him, and have no right to judge, but from what you've told me, that is the way I'm thinking. So don't let no one hand you anything, and want you to know that I will protect you in any way possible at any time. And you don't have to stand for any monkey business or be under any obligations to anyone. And if he ever does get hostile or molest you, I want to let you know you will be doing me a big kindness to let me know at once, and that will be sufficient. I realize we have had our misunderstandings because we were kids when we were married and didn't know what it was all about. And I expect if it had been later on, all would have been fine and okay. I don't want to bring up the past or unpleasant memories, but you know there is that something with us, unexplainable, something you or I are unable to realize, that in all of our difficulties, you would fight if I was talked about, and I would not have anyone say an ill word about you. So I believe we will always be so. What is it? I don't know. I feel we'll always be so. Be friends, and possibly more. Well, I had better stop, or I will be writing a love letter to you after all these years. Anyhow, Ruth, you are still to me as you were 20 years ago. I don't want to start on my vacation until I get my $4 $50 shares of railroad stock, which is now selling for $78 per share. So if you will or would like to make a 2-week trip somewhere by car or by train, whichever you prefer, would like to make a trip over to Canada and Niagara Falls or south to New Orleans, so be sure and let me know when you write all about what you think about where we will go. Vacation starts around June 15th or so. Well, Ruth, I will close. Give my best regards to our boys, and be sure and let me hear from you by return mail, if possible, and how you are feeling. So here goes. Signing off with best wishes and love to you, Clyde. As I have stated in the past, Ruth's horrible life choices have disturbed me over the years, and I've had a hard time processing who she was as a person, let alone as my ancestor. But this letter allows me to add a conclusion to their relationship. You see, Ruth died on June 6th, just 2.5 weeks after Clyde wrote her this letter. The cause of death was complications after a hysterectomy due to fibroids on June 2nd. She was 36 years old when she died. I should also mention that while this letter was very loving and looked to be a resurrection of their relationship, at that moment, she was married to another man. It would seem that Clyde was not acknowledging this marriage as he addressed the envelope to Mrs. Ruth Daniels. In fact, when she died, her tombstone identifies her as Ruth Daniels. Our family only recently learned of her marriage to another man after looking at her death certificate. My grandfather, her son, knew about this, but never mentioned it to the next generations. From Clyde's words, Ruth has apparently kicked out her current husband, and Clyde wants to be notified if he comes back and becomes hostile or molests her in any way. Another disturbing fact, she had only been married to her second husband for less than 2 months. With Clyde's words about hostility, I'm guessing the relationship was abusive. With her age, previous hospital visits prior to surgery, and fibroids, it always made me wonder if this was a pregnancy gone wrong. But I have no medical proof of that. I know she lost 2 of her 4 children when they were very young, so if possible, I'm sure she would have liked to have had more children. Again, no proof, just speculation. As Clyde made plans to take her on a trip, we can see his words are loving and hint at a rekindling of their relationship. What I didn't tell you is that there is a correction in the letter that I omitted. When Clyde states that he believes they will always be friends and possibly more, he had clearly written the word lovers and crossed it out with a single line to write more, leaving it as a teaser for her to see his true intentions. Despite her marital status and their rocky previous attempts at marriage to one another, I can at least be certain that he loved her. While I do not have her words to answer his, I like to think that the feeling was at least somewhat mutual. Who knows? If she had lived, perhaps they would have married again and hopefully made it last the rest of their days. Or racked up another divorce, but who's counting? Happy Valentine's Day, y'all. Today's poetry gem is entitled Cupid in the Olden Time by George Crowley. There was once a gentle time when the world was in its prime, and every day was a holiday, and every month was lovely May. Cupid then had but to go with his purple wings and a bow, and in blossomed vale and grove every shepherd knelt to love. Thanks for listening.
You have been listening to the Bloodroot Podcast, written and produced by your host, Sherry Daniels. For more information, please visit my website at genealogyliteracy.com/bloodroot. If you have a question that needs answering, a topic that needs to be covered, or a story to share, send me an email or direct message me via my social media accounts. If you have the Anchor app, you can leave me a voice message that may be included in a future episode. The platform used to produce this podcast was Anchor, with music provided by Anchor and Purple Planet. Again, thank you for listening, and stay tuned for a quick peek at our next episode.
Next time on the Bloodroot Podcast, Roots Tech Recap. Join me next month as we take a look at this year's Roots Tech Conference. What did we learn? What did we love? And is this virtual conference platform here to stay?